is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute. He is in the Middle East, but that is a good vantage to observe the remains of the Geneva Day, the meeting between the two presidents, Mr. Putin and Mr. Biden, both of them speaking to many constituents at home and abroad. However, Anatole Levin has published a piece at The Spectator saying one of the major audiences for the remarks and the presentations and the odd maneuvering, who arrived first, who was late, who's on time, is something that Anatole refers to as the blob. This is a reference, a metaphor from the Obama administration about the foreign affairs matters in Washington and the state security matters in Washington, the national security apparatus and the foreign affairs apparatus. Well, the same thing exists in Moscow. So, Anatole, a very good day to you. Let's begin with the blob of Moscow. How do you expect them to respond to the facts that we have now about the meeting between the two presidents? Was it wise for Mr. Putin to go forward with this meeting? Did he achieve what the blob wanted? Good day to you.
Hello, John. I think the blob will be happy enough with the summit and what Putin achieved, because, frankly, they, like the great majority of Russians, did not expect UNIT to achieve very much through this summit. But they will be, you know, glad that the ambassadors are returning. They will be glad that, you know, a measure of cooperation or possible cooperation has been established on Afghanistan and on nuclear arms reductions. And, you know, they'll be glad that Putin didn't give anything away, which, you know, he didn't. He didn't surrender any positions. But more than that, I don't think that they expected. But, I mean, what I think, you know, what I said in The Spectator and what I think is vital to remember is that the Western media is obsessed with the name of Putin. But, you know, Putin is the representative of a Russian elite with their own blob, as you say, with, you know, pretty firm, fixed, historically derived beliefs about Russian national interests and, you know, where Russia can compromise and where it cannot compromise. You know, it's a great mistake to think that what Russia does in foreign affairs is all somehow due to Putin's personality, and therefore to believe that it will change vastly when Putin eventually leaves. I think it will change very little. I think even if, which is hardly likely, but even if Alexei Navalny took power in Russia, I think it would change very little, because this is not a matter of personality. It's a matter of Russian perceptions of vital Russian national interests. You know, and of course the blob in Washington has, you know, similar dogmas about American vital interests and America's role in the world. All blobs of this kind have a sort of basic doctrine of, you know, national security, which, you know, as a lot of people in Washington, well, as Ben Rhodes, who coined the phrase blob, have found, it's very difficult to push against.
You observe that in both capitals, Washington and New York, the blob's opinion of what is fixed, what each leader must obey, is irrational from the outside. Did I read that correctly? Illogical. It doesn't make any sense to us. You have to be in Moscow to understand Moscow's obsession with the near abroad. You have to be in Washington to understand the obsession with democracy. Did I read you correctly? And after yesterday's meeting, was there any challenge to that, those fixed opinions? Did either side become more sympathetic to the other side's illogic?
No, not at all, by the look of things. You know, Russia remains absolutely committed to defending its positions in the near abroad, and Biden, you know, continued to preach global democracy. In a way, by the way, that has caused, you know, hysterical laughter, you know, not just among many Russians, but in Latin America and other places as well, when Biden said that, you know, America has never interfered in other people's elections. I think there was a report of Carnegie Mellon which said that America has done that 81 times since 1947, not counting actual outright coups to overturn elections. So, you know, there is a degree of, seen from outside, that there is a degree of extraordinary, you know, self-delusion about this in Washington.
Perhaps they lost a good understanding of the year 1953 in Tehran, Anatole. That's the only thing I can imagine.
For example.
Now, we come back to the blobs in between. And I call upon your measure of London first, the London blob. Was there anything to choose from in these few remarks that both presidents made afterwards? Well, they were more than few. They were carefully presented. Is to advantage in London, and we can add Paris and Berlin eventually. Western Europe was watching because they do business with Moscow.
Well, the West Europeans will be glad about the basic normalization of relations, you know, ambassadors going back, consular services being restored. You know, they were very unhappy when relations seemed to be breaking down altogether. And, for the Germans, the biggest thing was when Biden lifted some of the sanctions on the Nord Stream gas pipeline from Russia. This has been widely presented in the United States as a concession by America to Russia. It wasn't. It was a concession to Germany, because the pipeline is 90% finished. The Germans have invested huge amounts of money in it. It became obvious that there was no way that Germany was going to give this up. And for Biden to have continued to put pressure on them would simply have caused a pointless crisis in U.S.-German relations. So they're glad of all that. They're glad that it didn't lead to more sort of furious exchanges or clashes. But European relations with Russia, it depends very much on which country, of course, but still in general have also become very bad since 2014, not as bad as between America and Russia. This summit is not going to lead to a new breakthrough, you know, either in U.S.-Russian relations or in European-Russian relations. It will, however, perhaps, you know, open the way for gradual negotiations towards future agreements in certain areas, you know, nuclear arms reductions, cyberspace.
Coming back to the blob in Washington, you mentioned it, but I wanted to ask in particular, because Washington's, as you know, starkly divided town right now between the red and the blue, the Democrats and the Republicans, and especially in Congress. Did you hear anything from Vladimir Putin's remarks or President Biden's remarks that would alarm Capitol Hill, that would in any way stay their presentation that they are now regarding Russia as the new old adversary? Anything at all that suggested that there was an opening for dialogue?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to the blob, you have to distinguish between rhetoric and reality, and also the professional blob, if you like, you know, the military, the diplomats, some of the, you know, think tankers. Because, of course, unfortunately, it's become just absolutely normal now, on both sides of the aisle, by the way, Democrats do it as well as Republicans, to raise hysterical and completely mendacious, it must be said very often, criticisms of the president in power for dealing with other major states, accusations of cowardice, of surrender, of, you know, you've seen the Republicans saying this about Biden in recent days. Of course, previously the Democrats said it about the Republicans. Of course, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous. The Biden administration has taken, you know, just as tougher stance against Russia as previous administrations, and at least rhetorically, of course, a much tougher stance than the Trump administration. So there is this artificial, you know, political hysteria in Washington. But as far as the, on Capitol Hill, but as far as the professional blob is concerned, you know, except for the, you know, absolutely hysterically anti-Russian elements, I think they will not be displeased with this. You know, Putin gave away nothing serious, but then Biden didn't give away anything serious either. You know, and the way has been opened for potentially fruitful negotiations on nuclear arms reductions. I mean, much more difficult negotiations on cyberspace, but then, you know, you've got to begin somewhere. And perhaps, you know, a measure of renewed cooperation against terrorism and in Afghanistan. But no essential, in fact, no American position was surrendered in a way that would make, you know, a calm, non-political member of the American blob unhappy.
I want to turn to specifics, because we've discussed before your measure of what might have done at the Geneva meeting, and we'll begin in the near abroad with Ukraine when we come back. I'm speaking with Anatole Lieven, Professor Anatole Lieven. He is in the Middle East right now, but he's headed to the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft in Washington, writing at The Spectator about anticipation of this meeting between the two presidents. And now that it's done, we're off to how Kiev heard these comments by the presidents. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.